if she loses, it'll signal that it was a really, really bad year for Democrats. And it'll also mean the party will probably start questioning, you know, what are we going to do now? What does the future of our party look like now?
With Election Day looming, we will soon better understand the political winds of 2022. Right? This is the Politics Podcast from WUNC. I'm Jeff Tabiri. Are there Republican hurricane force winds on the political horizon? Or is it merely a breeze? Could the forecast shift yet again and see Democrats carry a gust going against historical trends? The polls are open until Tuesday. And while I thought about just carrying on for 25 minutes and giving you all the thoughts in my head, I thought better of it. So, here is a hodgepodge of voices. Three journalists, a political scientist, a Democratic strategist, and a leading Republican state lawmaker getting you ready for November 8th. I'll offer my two cents in a bit. Name and title for us, please.
Gary Robertson, State House reporter, The Associated Press.
Lucille Sherman, reporter with Axios Raleigh.
John Bale, and I'm the House Majority Leader. Republican from Wayne County.
Morgan Jackson, Nexus Strategies.
Susan Roberts, Professor of Political Science, Davidson College.
Steve Harrison, political reporter at WFAE.
A few days before Election Day, any prevailing takeaway thus far? I realize it's an oxymoron because we're not there yet.
Well, I think it's very fluid, and I am going to stop looking at polls. I'm going to stop looking at predictions. I'm just going to try to look at turnout, and I'm going to try to see if there's any sort of localization of the message, because I think at this point, it's been very national. And one thing I'm going to look for is if there's a significant uptick in women that are going to vote.
My take is that if you go back to the summer and the Dobbs decision overturning Roe versus Wade, I think it was a very real impact on the electorate. I think you saw that in the special elections across the country where Democrats did better than expected. I think that was a real thing. But I think as we've moved into the fall, abortion has kind of faded, you know, as a top news story. You just don't see it talked about as much and on TV and in the New York Times, et cetera. It's just not front and center anymore. And I think maybe that may be showing up in some of the shift we see in the polls toward the Republicans, that the economy is now rising to the top again, inflation. And so I think, I think there was a significant shift in the election back in the summer. I think it's kind of shifting back to that status of the spring in early summer when Republicans had this general kind of built-in advantage.
Mostly we're less than a week out. Things don't seem like they're looking very good for Democrats. Abortion feels like the issue that was supposed to save Democrats in the cycle and make the year less terrible for them. And it doesn't really look like it's shaping up to be that way. So that's one. I'm also watching sort of how crime is playing. And mostly I'm watching how those issues are playing in the state legislative races.
I know from our standpoint, we've been working tirelessly to get folks reelected and elected. The speaker and I and others have been crisscrossing the state for months now. And I will be very happy on November the 8th at 7:30 when it comes to an end and we see the results.
It's just been interesting to see kind of the trajectory of the Senate race here not be as high intensity as perhaps we've seen in the past.
Right. No, I don't disagree with that at all, but let me roll with it a little bit because you have covered, I'm going to just estimate here, half a dozen midterms in North Carolina.
Yeah.
Why is that from your estimation?
It almost seems like that at the national level, they are playing in so many different other states that it seems to leave the indication that the pathway for either party to reach a majority, 50 for the Democrats and 51 for the Republicans, doesn't necessarily have to go through North Carolina. Now, if Republicans lose a seat, that's a, you know, that's a big deal, a seat that they've held since 2004 election. But particularly on the Democratic side, there seems to be a sense that to make it to 50 doesn't necessarily have to include North Carolina. So maybe that has, as we've seen, one major super PAC from National Democrats hasn't spent near as much as the corresponding Republican super PAC affiliated with Minority Leader Mitch McConnell.
We've got a real shot to win the U.S. Senate race. We've got a shot to win a competitive congressional race in North Carolina. And we've got a really good shot at preventing the supermajorities in North Carolina based on not only what I'm seeing with early vote turnout, but also the spending levels of each of these campaigns and where they are in a lot of these legislative races.
You feel better or you feel worse about legislative races relative to statewide races?
I think I feel better about legislative races. And the reason I say that is you got to remember that races for the legislature are like real estate. It's about location, location, location. And what we see is a lot of the competitive seats that Republicans would have to win in order to take supermajorities in the House and in the Senate run through suburban North Carolina and urban North Carolina. You've got several seats, three seats in Wake County they'd have to win, two to three in Mecklenburg. You've got two in Wilmington. What we're seeing is these urban suburban areas are not only growing rapidly in population, they're becoming more Democratic every year. These are areas where issues like abortion access are much higher on voters' radars than they might be in the rural areas. And you see Democrats in urban areas more motivated to vote and more motivated to vote in suburban areas. That's where they're the most motivated to vote.
Is there a most important race on the ballot in North Carolina?
Again, I think a lot of our colleagues know this, but maybe the public doesn't know as much about the two state Supreme Court races and how significant they could be in terms of, again, a lot of things have to fall. But if the Republicans manage a supermajority in the legislature and then can pass bills more at will without worrying about the governor's veto, then people who are opposed to those Republican policies, you know, have to look to the courts for help. And the final stop in North Carolina is the state Supreme Court. And so when you have a 4-3 seat majority among favoring registered Democrats on that body, on the bench, and the potential that only one of the Republicans only need to win one or of the two seats that are going to be on statewide ballots in order to take back a majority, there's a lot of stake there. And viewers of television and maybe YouTube will be seeing more ads even in the final days, citing some people that you may never even have heard of until now.
Right, right.
Not only does it change the majority if Republicans win one of the two seats, but because of how our seats and the terms are, how they show up on the ballots over the next 4 to 6 years,
right. The
winner of these races, whoever's in the majority, will probably, particularly on the Republican side, if the Republicans get the majority, they will have the majority based on the term shifting for, you know, potentially 5 years.
Well, I think clearly, I guess two things. I mean, obviously, the U.S. Senate race is the thing that is the race everyone is talking about, and then of course, the fight over whether Republicans get a supermajority in the General Assembly, because that will, if that happens, if they do get supermajorities in the House and Senate, the immediate question on day one, the day after the election, is going to be, what kind of abortion restrictions do Republicans push for in 2023? Are they going to go for kind of the Phil Berger first trimester thing that he's floated, kind of a 15 weeks, or are they going to go for a more restrictive 6-week type South Carolina ban? So again, I think huge issue.
No, I would say all the races are important. For the first time since I've served as majority leader, I feel like Republicans are playing offense. And so seats that we hadn't been able, well, I wouldn't say hadn't been able, but seats where we wouldn't have been particularly focused on in the past, we were playing defense, and seats we already had, we've been able to raise the funds and really try to win those seats. You look at the morale and the mood in the country, what happened in Virginia last year showed signs of how big this election could be for us. And so we have been on offense since day one, trying to go after every race that we feel like that we can have a chance of being successful in.
Most important race on the ballot in North Carolina. Hot take, I don't think it's the Senate race. I also don't think it's NC-13, although that's pretty important. I have been really watching the state Senate races, and the one I'm most interested in is Sydney Batch's race in Southern Wake County. The reason being, she's sort of an up-and-coming Democrat. I think she's representative of the future of the party and where the party wants to go. And if she loses, it'll signal that it was a really, really bad year for Democrats. And it'll also mean the party will probably start questioning, you know, what are we going to do now? What does the future of our party look like now?
And maybe to put a finer point on it, if a black woman can't win in suburban Wake County in a year in which Roe was overturned, Lordy B, what's the path?
Right.
Right? And that's not a knock on Sidney Batch, but if the, I mean, so much of this is national factors and dynamics, but
right.
To your point, if Sidney Batch doesn't win, Democrats are going to have to do some real soul searching.
Yeah, and Sidney Batch is known for being a prolific fundraiser. They've poured a ton of money into her campaign. I just think it, and I'm not really sure if I think, I don't know if I have a prediction in that race. I could go either way.
I'll build on that. You can pivot back to that and or add other ones. What are you going to be watching most closely on election night? Yeah.
So I'll be watching the Northern Wake Senate seats, the Southern Wake Senate seat, and honestly, Wake County Sheriff is one that I'm really interested in. I don't really see a pathway for a Republican to win Wake County, but what if? So I'll be paying attention to that pretty closely too. And honestly, the NC-13 district between Beau Hines and Wiley Nickel, that'll be really interesting.
Again, I think there's a handful of legislative races. I roughly say about 15 of them that will decide whether or not Republicans reach 72 seats in the House and 30 in the Senate. A lot of money has been spent, I think particularly about the two Senate races in Wake County that could determine the outcome in the Senate. I'm also curious in the House, particularly in some eastern races out in the rural areas where mm-hmm. you really see Republicans with a decent chance to win seats that they haven't held for a long time or have been held. They've been held maybe by African-American Democrats, and Republicans could win those. That's in many ways a result of redistricting, that those districts got larger geographically and brought in new voters. And so it changed the dynamic a little bit in many of these districts. So I'm curious to see whether Republicans will have that kind of a big night, particularly in eastern and northeastern North Carolina.
Give me a headline, realistically, that you expect to read on your phone, on your tablet, on your computer, and you're just too young to get a newspaper, but should you get a newspaper at your
house? I do get newspapers.
You get newspapers. It's an old soul, daughter of a newspaper reporter. Give me a headline that you realistically expect to read on November 9th.
Well, I've already pre-written a headline that I expect to write on the eve of November 9th, or on the night of November 9th, and that's Republicans take a supermajority in the General Assembly and win a majority in the state Supreme Courts.
Republicans win supermajority with 73 seats.
That's in the state House. What happens in terms of the supermajority in the state Senate?
I really haven't followed their stuff. I've been focusing on the House, but I feel like they're going to be at 29 to 31, somewhere around there. I think they get a supermajority as well.
On November 9th, you may see some headlines that don't have an outcome. I'm not saying which ones, but If you're reading your local newspaper or online, you're probably going to see something that says, nope, got to wait a little bit longer.
I think that I think it'll be a good night for Republicans across the country and in North Carolina. Like I said before, Jeff, that you had when you kind of look back at 30,000 feet at this race, all signs have pointed to a good Republican year. And we did have that summer period after the Dobbs decision in which things really seemed to turn around for Democrats. But I think we are kind of reverting back to that initial the initial environment that's just favorable for the GOP. And I'm not going to go so far as say that the GOP will get super majorities in the General Assembly, but I think it will overall be a very good night for them.
Well, you could say Democrats come close, but no cigar. I think it'll be something along the lines of enthusiasm gap evades Democrats. You know, that the Democrats win the battles, but lose the war.
I think November 9th, it's going to feel like deja vu. We're going to head to a Senate that is 49-50, with Republicans having a one-seat lead, and we're going to a runoff in Georgia that will determine the control of the U.S. Senate. And I think we're headed there again, a deja vu from 2020.
Democratic strategist Morgan Jackson. You also heard from Republican State House Representative John Bell, Davidson College Professor Susan Roberts, and reporters Gary Robertson of the Associated Press, Lucille Sherman of Axios Raleigh, and Steve Harrison of public radio station WFAE in Charlotte. All right, my turn. I'll try to be brief. Preemptive takeaways. First, despite all the prognosticating, my hand is raised, the election isn't over. Polls remain open. Go vote. Goes without saying. Some leading national Democrats have started to question the party's strategy or lack thereof in recent days, and I'm curious to see whether national Democrats will come to regret not doing more to help the candidacy of Sherry Beasley. I'm recording this on Wednesday afternoon. Barack Obama still has not been here, and maybe the former president comes and stumps in the next few days, but he has yet to do so. How come? Most important race or races? Legislative battleground districts, obviously. As for Tuesday, I am very interested in overall turnout and the U.S. Senate margin. Remember, 2018 midterm turnout was 53%. Most people I speak with are confident that it will be up this year, but how much more? The general consensus is that the higher that figure climbs, the better it will be for Republicans. And related, how close does the U.S. Senate race finish up? If it's within a point or two, supermajorities may slip from the grasp of John Bell and his legislative colleagues. But if Bud wins by 4, 5, even 6 points, veto-proof majorities will probably follow, along with some upsets in eastern North Carolina. Oh, and a headline. Most expensive General Assembly races in North Carolina history yield supermajority in one chamber. All right, that's it. Glad you stopped by. Hopefully, you join us again on Friday when we review the news with Rob and Clark. And a programming note for you on Tuesday night, I'll be in studio with the talented Will Michaels, providing some analysis of the returns as they arrive. Until we visit your podcast feeds again, thanks for listening. I'm Jeff.